Welcome to The Final Word, a Bible teaching ministry with pastor, teacher, and author Jim Andrews. The Final Word is grounded on the invincible conviction that what the Bible teaches, God teaches. And that is the last word. On this program, truth still matters. The Bible is in, Babel is out. The Final Word is funded by listeners like you. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about the program, please go to our website at thefinalwordradio.com. There you'll find archives so you can listen to any program you may have missed. Visit us on Facebook at The Final Word Radio and write us a note. We love hearing from our listeners. We'll provide other contact information at the end of the program, so have your pen ready. And now Jim Andrews continues his current study of God's Word.
Good day, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for joining us on The Final Word. We continue our exposition of the book of Exodus. We're in Exodus chapter 18, where Jethro, the priest of Midian, Moses' father-in-law, had now heard all that God had done for Moses and for his people, and how the Lord had brought Israel out of Egypt. So upon that occasion, he took Moses' wife, Zipporah, after Moses had sent her away, and he had taken in her two sons, and he came with his sons and Zipporah, Moses' wife, into the wilderness where Moses was camped at the Mount of God. He sent ahead an announcement that he was coming with her two sons, and Moses, we read in verse 7, went out to meet his father-in-law, and he bowed down and kissed him, and they asked each other of their welfare and went into the tent. Moses told his father-in-law all that the Lord had done to Pharaoh and to the Egyptians for Israel's sake, all of the hardship that had befallen them on the journey and how the Lord had delivered them. And Jethro rejoiced over all the goodness that the Lord had done for Israel. So Jethro said, "Blessed be the Lord who delivered you from the hand of the Egyptians and from the hand of Pharaoh, and who delivered the people from under the hand of the Egyptians. Now I know that the Lord is greater than all the gods. Indeed, it was proven when they dealt proudly against the people." Then Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, took up burnt offering and sacrifices for God, and Aaron came with all the elders of Israel to eat a meal with Moses' father-in-law before the Lord. That brings us to verse 13. "And it came about the next day that Moses sat to judge all the people. And the people stood about Moses from morning until evening. Now when Moses' father-in-law saw all that he was doing for the people, he said, 'What is this thing that you are doing for the people? Why do you sit alone as judge, and all the people stand about you from morning until evening?' Moses said to his father-in-law, 'Because the people come to me to inquire of God. When they have a dispute, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor and make known the statutes of God and his laws.' Moses' father-in-law said to him, 'The thing that you're doing is not good. You will surely wear out, both yourselves and these people who are with you, for the task is too heavy for you. You cannot do it alone. Now listen to me, and I'll give you counsel,' Moses' father-in-law says. 'God be with you. You be the people's representative before God, and you bring the disputes to God. Then you teach them the statutes and the laws and make known to them the way in which they are to walk and the work they are to do. Furthermore, you shall select out of all the people able men, men who fear God, men of truth, men who hate dishonest gain, and you shall place these over them as leaders of thousands and hundreds and fifties and tens. And let them judge the people at all times. And let it be that every major dispute they will bring to you, but every lesser or minor dispute they themselves will judge. So it will be easier for you, and they will bear the burden with you. If you do this thing, and the Lord so commands you, you will be able to endure, and all these people will go to their place in peace.'" At this point in time, Israel was barely 3 months into her wilderness sojourn. As yet, the nation had no formal government, nor did it have any legal or military infrastructure, nor did it yet have a full-blown code of laws other than a patriarchal system consisting of family heads, that is, tribal leaders or elders. Other than that, there was no one except the prophet Moses whose authority derived from God. Now, this was a difficult situation. Friends, any time you have a group of people thrown together at close quarters over a period of time, especially in stressful times, and they had a lot of those in the wilderness, there are going to be frictions and disputes. The Jewish people were, by nature, according to the scripture, a voluble and contentious race, with over 2 million of them traipsing through the desert. There were a lot of issues that needed to be adjudicated among them. With Moses as their acknowledged leader, and one who obviously was wired into God, playing judge under those conditions just went with the territory. Now, Moses accepted that responsibility by default and without complaint. Whenever the camp was not on the move and the people settled down into an encampment for a spell, Moses would dutifully sit all day and hear their cases. And he's no young chicken. Some minor, some major, some petty, some that would challenge the wisdom of Solomon. It tells us a whole lot about this man Moses that at age 80, Moses possessed the patience and the stamina for that work. It's remarkable that he was so conscientious about their welfare that Moses would put himself through that exhausting rigor day after day when the camp was stationary. As well-intentioned and as admirable as it was, what Moses was doing, and Jethro saw that right away, was as imprudent as it was remarkable and laudable in intention. A servant of God can expend himself in many endeavors, all good in themselves, but he may be tactically unwise. And that is what Moses was doing, and Jethro saw it. We can learn from his mistake in protocol, as well as Moses' humility in accepting advice. This father-in-law, Jethro, turns out to be a very wise man with superb administrative instincts. The Lord sent him to Moses in a timely fashion to impart to Moses counsel that would prolong Moses' life and service. And here once again, just in passing, a side note, I want you to see there are various ways God could have revealed this to Moses. But as I say to you, God's normal way is through providence, that is, through means. The Lord could have told Moses this himself, but he chose to send his father-in-law to tell Moses something that he needed to hear. Expect that to be God's normal way. When the Lord wants to tell you something, when the Lord wants to make us a little wiser, when the Lord wants to correct us, when the Lord wants to rebuke us, more often than not, if it's not directly through his word, he will send a brother or sister, directly or indirectly. Maybe you hear them like on radio, something like this, or in a sermon. Some way or other, the Lord gives you wisdom. That is God's normal way. As Jethro watched from the sideline the next day, as Moses took his seat on the bench in the morning and continued making case decisions until evening, well, it was clear to Jethro that this procedure was not only putting too much strain and stress on Moses, but also it was putting great strain on the people. They had to stand around for hours and hours for their turn for their cases to be heard. Well, sooner or later, Jethro knew good and well that Moses would crack under this load. The system in place would have a deleterious effect on the people also. They'd become impatient and they'd begin to whine and grumble and murmur. So this was not good for anybody. Under that kind of strain, not only would Moses' health start to wear away, but mental and emotional fatigue eventually would deprive Moses of the kind of patience and sympathy, not to mention some of the intellectual sharpness a judge would require. In short, continuing in this mode, Jethro saw as he watched from the sidelines, would serve neither Moses' health nor justice well. And since Moses had to take so many of these issues before the Lord for divine guidance, such an overly rigorous and demanding schedule did not augur well for the kind of application in prayer one in Moses' position would need. So Jethro, whom God in his providence sent on this occasion and caused him to observe the ongoing of the proceedings, saw a train wreck in the making, no matter how well-intentioned Moses was and how hard he was willing to work. Yes, of course, the Lord could, and I think up to that point, did impart to Moses supernatural stamina and focus. But God's habits in supporting us by direct supernatural means, when secondary natural resources or adjustments will serve his purposes, God's habits are conservative. The Lord is sparing of bringing up the heavy stuff, so to speak, when lighter means are at our fingertips. That is so important. And so many people who are into the signs and wonders routine just do not get it, and we must. For example, we've talked about this before. It's mentioned in the book of Deuteronomy. Man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds from the mouth of God. Jesus quoted that in the Mount of Temptation in the Gospel of Matthew. The Lord, if he so chooses, can sustain a life without the normal daily required intake. However, just because he can do that, don't test God. Don't expect him to prove that when we decide unnecessarily to opt out of mealtime so we can carry on the Lord's work. If for some reason it is necessary, then go ahead. But if it's not necessary, respect nature. Respect those, what we call laws of nature, that God has put in place, and do the right thing by your body. No, the Lord has provided food to sustain us, and God expects his servants as required to partake of his provision, and not just say, well, man does not live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. That is true, but don't misapply it. Only when it is not available, and the work must forge ahead, that's when we fall back upon his supernatural sustenance. Well, in this case, the Lord did not want Moses trying to do all of this by himself, wearing himself out on the people. Again, Moses was a man of God. He was well-intentioned. He was very capable. And most of all, he was conscientious. But before things got too far down the road in the wilderness, remember they're only 3 months in as this episode happens. So before they get too far down the road in the wilderness, and the wheels come off, as Jethro warned about, and that would be Moses breaking down and doing something foolish through exhaustion or the people pushed to the point of exasperation with the wheels of justice moving too slowly. None of that a good thing. A merciful God sends a man for whom Moses already enjoyed a high degree of respect, and a man to whom Moses relates. And that man, Jethro, his father-in-law, gave Moses some very, very good advice. Advice from which we can all profit. Before we talk about the counsel Jethro gives Moses, let me say that in the narrative we observe three of the leading marks of wise people. One, they give good advice. Two, wise people listen to good advice. And three, wise people have pretty good instincts about who's got good advice. Let me repeat that. Three, I think, leading marks of wise people in any age. They give good advice. No, only God gives inspired advice. But wise and prudent people have a way of giving good advice. And two, they listen to good advice. And three, they have pretty good instincts about who's got good advice. Well, Jethro, Moses' father-in-law, who's in focus in this narrative in chapter 18, he was smart enough about life to be helpful to anyone with ears to hear. Moses, on his part, was wise enough by now to have his ears on and to recognize wisdom when he heard it. You know, a wise counselor, folk, is of little use to people who don't have ears. When people come to me for advice, for counsel, that's one of the first things I look for. I remember in my teaching day, students in Bible college, later in seminary, sometimes they thought they were testing me. Actually, in a great many cases, I was testing them. And the seriousness with which I took them and would take them later depended on my perception of whether or not they had ears. A lot of people will ask advice. A lot of them, you give them good advice, they won't take it. They don't have ears. But having ears isn't too helpful if a person is not discerning enough to know a fool from a sage. Some people will go for advice, be ready to receive it, but for whatever reasons, they just don't have the instincts to distinguish between the two, and they will listen to a fool and they will go for that advice. Well, you say, how do you fix that, Jim? Well, nothing will help fine-tuning our hearing like knowing God. And knowing God comes from walking close to God and marinating our minds in his word. That's the best cultivator that I know of. Well, in verses 15 and 16, Moses, we see, candidly explains his dilemma to his father-in-law. Well, I do this day after day, he said. That's why I'm doing what you're calling attention to, because the people come to me to inquire of God. That's a good thing. When they have a dispute, Moses says, it comes to me, and I judge between a man and his neighbor. I try to make known to them the statutes of God and his laws as the Lord reveals them to me in each situation. That's the idea here, because God has not yet in this narrative formally given his law to them. Essentially what Moses says when Jethro asks him, what are you doing, man? Well, he shrugs his shoulder and he says, what can I do? You know the old saying, if you build it, they will come. Well, if I set up a legal bench, they come out to the woodwork in droves with their issues. They want me to inquire of God about what I should do. I don't know what else I can do. I can't just blow them off, Moses is saying, because I'm tired. God has committed them to my care, and I feel the weight of my responsibility to shepherd them. By the way, in those days, before there was any written revelation, going to Moses, the prophet of God, was the functional equivalent of a church turning to the Scriptures for direction. I want you to note also in passing that, like some today, people then were pretty selective about when and where they wanted God's direction. And as we have seen so far, 3 months into the wilderness, these people never felt much compunction about rejecting God's words or Moses's, which were one and the same, whenever it wasn't agreeable to them. That's very contemporary. Well, in verses 17 and 18, Moses' father-in-law said to him, you know, son, the thing that you're doing is not smart. It's not an ethical appraisal when he says what you're doing is not good. It's a procedural one. Moses' method was faulty to the point of self-destructive, and it was adverse to the welfare of the people. You will surely wear out both yourself and these people who are with you. The task is just too heavy for you. Any man, you can't continue to do this alone. Now, you talk about contemporary relevance. We've got to listen to the Scriptures. In other words, Jethro here is giving advice, and while this is narrative and it leads by indirection, the whole tenor of the text is that this is approved. This is not some stranger bystander who's come by and is giving impertinent advice to Moses, the prophet of God. The face of all of this is that it comes with God's approval, as we see from Moses' later actions. So here's a beware or a caveat to any two hands-on pastor or to any two hands-on manager, and we'd be well advised to heed it. If it is a big job, listen, we can't do it all alone. Anytime we try to be a one-man gang, folks, it not only wears us down to the nub, and some people have a tendency to be control freaks and they're the worst, but in the end it'll wear us down to the nub. But in some ways, depending on the situation, that two-hands-on minister, that two-hands-on manager, it'll have a negative effect on others. In this case, Moses' procedure was overstressing him as well as the people. In other cases, trying to do too much yourself may not overstress the people standing around and watching you do your thing so much as just stifle them. What do I mean by that? I mean stifle their gifts and stifle their talents. And because you've got one or two of you doing everything, it promotes spiritual stagnation. And that's a seedbed of dissatisfaction and eventually contention. You know, there are at least two ways, and I don't limit it, of course, to two ways, but there are at least two ways that we can fumble the ball in Christian leadership. One is moral turpitude, when we run off the rails morally. But there's another. It's operational ineptitude. So Jethro warns Moses, as great a man as Moses is, that he has an administrative situation he needs to fix. And Jethro doesn't just tell him that he needs a fix, but he immediately offers his son-in-law a tidy administrative remedy that will take much of the overload off Moses' shoulders. So remember that. If you're a leader, I have to remember that. You can mess up by moral turpitude, or you can mess up by operational ineptitude. And that's what Jethro was telling Moses about right here and right now. He says, this won't work. This is operational ineptitude. You're a great man. You got a great heart. You've got a great work ethic. Da, 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 da. You've got all of that. But functionally, this is not prudent. What Jethro recommends is a top-down infrastructure that will distribute the caseloads according to their weight and difficulty, from lower courts to higher courts, with Moses serving as a supreme court of one. Now listen to me, I shall give you counsel, and may God be with you if he approves what I'm telling you. You be the people's representative before God, that is, the one and only God, and you bring the disputes, the matters to God that they cannot resolve at lower levels. Then you teach them the statutes and laws as God reveals them to you, and make known to them the way in which they are to walk and the work they are to do. So, according to his advice, Moses is to reserve himself as their mediator before the Lord. He's to serve as their oracle, the voice of God, and their instructor, their supreme instructor. So let Moses, Jethro says, you limit yourself to these important duties. And so that he doesn't have to consume himself sitting at the bench at all hours and keeping the people with issues standing in line all day, you shall select out of all the people able men who fear God, men of truth, those who hate dishonest gain. Place these over them, leaders of thousands, hundreds, fifties, and tens, according to their abilities, of course. And you let these leaders, whom the Lord put forward, and you appoint, let them judge the people at all times. Bring the major disputes to you, every minor disputes they can judge themselves. It'll be easier for you, and they will bear a burden with you. F.B. Meyer has some choice comments on this passage. We do not always see the cost at which we are doing our work. We are sustained by the excitement and interest of it, the stir, the rush, the cry of the combatants, the chances and opportunities of the battle, the alluring form of victory to be won at the price of just one more effort. All these things conceal from us the expenditure of our reserves, which is patent enough to others. Some men get weary of forbearing. Some men cannot live slowly. They must expend themselves, pouring out their lives as a libation from a bowl. And it is an act of benevolence when some Jethro is prompted to interpose and suggest, I love this phrase, a mitigation of the fever, a slackening of the eager rush. The Jethros seldom prevail with us, Meyer says. They get scant thanks for their pains. We have to learn by some terrible collapse. Unfortunately, that's too often true. Well, Jethro gives Moses a lesson in administrative efficiency and in delegation. You know, businesses pay experts hundreds of thousands of dollars a year to hone and refine management skills of employees. But what amazes me when I see and read some of their state-of-the-art advice, so much of it one can find in one form or another already embedded in the scriptures and absolutely free of charge. Nobody is good enough or has the time to be all things to all people. If we have an oversized job, we must learn to surround ourselves with good people who can share the load, or bad things will happen. They may happen anyway, but they are certain to happen if we try to play Superman. So delegate. Not to just anybody, however. Jethro has some very, very important words to say about who we delegate to. Sometimes we delegate to the wrong people. I've never had any trouble delegating, but sometimes I've made humongous mistakes in who I delegated things to. We'll talk about that in our next study. Thank you, dear friends, for joining us on The Final Word. God bless you and have a wonderful day.
The Final Word is a listener-supported ministry. Should you want to partner with us or want other information about this program, please visit our website at thefinalwordradio.com. Our postal address is The Final Word, 4565 Carmen Drive, Lake Oswego, Oregon, 97035. Our email address is info@thefinalwordradio.com. Our phone number is 503-699-9840. If this program has ministered to you, tell a friend about it. We do solicit your prayers for God's hand upon this outreach.